breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Happy Tuesday, everybody. The 14th day of March. 314. Of course, 3.14 pi, that mathematical symbol. Also, big day for CPI, Consumer Price Index. See what I did there? We'll get to that at some point in the 10 o'clock hour. The inflation rates, challenging for consumers, challenging for all of us, let's be honest. But some pi facts before we get too far down the road. We're on Aaron Rodgers' watch, as you know. I know I deliberately stayed away from that story yesterday. Stayed away from it completely. I thought it was healthy. Didn't expect anything to happen. But it sounds like, feels like, this exudes a breaking news story happening today. I just have that feeling. Maybe during my show, maybe not. Maybe Jeff's. Maybe Wisconsin's afternoon news. Who knows? But at some point, we'll be breaking that story down for all of you. So on that note, Greg Matzik will join us about 9:15. But a little information about Pi Day. So my wife's a math teacher, right? So she always sends me interesting facts about Pi Day. I have a non-mathematical fact about Pi Day because I made it my show poll today. I had fun with the concept of pi, not the PI, but the PIE. So we know scientists and math geeks celebrate Pi Day, right? I was impressed by Marissa Wallison earlier, rattled off like 30 numbers. Oh, yeah, producer can do that too. Oh, interesting, huh? Might have to challenge you later. I was very impressed. My daughter, Katie, who has one of those photographic memories, she had a high school teacher once who said in advance of Pi Day, the day before, I think, to be honest, said if anyone can memorize the first, I think it was 99 or 100 characters, numbers in Pi, recite them from memory, you get an A on the quiz. She memorized them, and she did it, and she got the A. So that's my daughter. She's got that skill. Not everybody has that, but she has it. All right, so my question is simple. It has nothing to do with math. What's your favorite pie, the PIE version? Now, I am kind of shocked because I gave you a few choices. Apple, pumpkin, sweet potato, one of my personal favorites. Sweet potato is barely measuring a vote or two, 0.5%. That's like a historic low for anything I've ever asked. So I love sweet potato. I prefer it over pumpkin, actually, but no one ever makes it at my house, but that's me. So apple is right now getting about 36.8%. I think that's about what I expected, maybe a little higher. Pumpkin, about 25%. Pumpkin pie, I love pumpkin pie as well. Sweet potato, as I said, 0.5%. But the interesting thing is other. And we already have 200 votes, folks. I just announced a poll. 37.8% other. So let's just sample what people are saying about the other. Blueberry, key lime, French silk. Now, this is cheating. Pizza pie? No, that doesn't count. That's just a clever thing. Banana cream. A lot of pizzas. Come on. Be more creative than that. Pecan pie. Bourbon. How about bourbon pecan pie? Homemade. With a little vanilla ice cream on top. Pecan pie getting a lot of shepherd's pie. Key lime, coconut, banana cream. Cherry made with fresh tart cherries from Door County. What is this, a promotional ad here for Door County? Come on now. Banana cream pie, pecan pie, French silk, and blueberry. Keep those coming. If you're not on the old Twitter, you can find the poll at 620 WTMJ or at WTMJ Steve. Thanks for the follow. Over 5,000 followers now. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Tell me what you think if you're on the old National Bank talk and text line. Favorite PIE, I still think Apple's going to win at the end of the day, but this I wouldn't be shocked if this thing got 1,000 votes. People love pie. Who doesn't like pie? Come on now. The centerpiece of any well-done dessert course at any just like that, Apple's ticked into the lead. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to get to the elephant in the room, or should we say the Rodgers in the dark space story. After this on WTMJ. Happy Pi Day, everybody. celebrate with a PIE. Just quickly on the phone line, Old National Bank talking text line, a listener says cherry pie with cheese on top. I think that's a Wisconsin thing, right? I think I have some relatives that do that. Doesn't sound appealing to me, but I dig what you're trying to do there. All right, we got to talk about it. I deliberately avoided it yesterday because I didn't think there was going to be any meat on the bone yesterday night, and there wasn't, clearly. A lot of speculation. Trey Wingo weighing in that the deal was done. Who better to talk to? The guy's everywhere. He's at spring training. He's back here now. He's talking about Aaron Rodgers. Mr. Greg Matzik. Good morning, Greg.
Apple pie, number one on the list. My great aunt Pearl's got a wonderful apple pie recipe. I cannot even duplicate it. If I try it, it's delicious.
Yes, and would you or would you not put vanilla ice cream on it?
So I would not, but I'm the same person who does not put any kind of sauce on my Italian sausage. I just like it with a little green pepper, and I'm good.
I like a minimalist kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, purist.
Say that.
Yeah,
I'm a very simple man, Steve. I make my decisions quickly, in a timely fashion. I don't leave people hanging out to dry. You wanted to know my pie selection of choice,
man.
And I told you within the first 9 seconds of being on the air. See how easy this is?
Greg is so aggressive. I like aggressive Greg. Keep it coming. Let's be aggressive with the Aaron Rodgers story. I waited all day. Nothing happened, Greg. What's going on here?
This clown is trolling everybody, and he's enjoying every second of it playing out on social media. Here's what I think happened yesterday, because Trey Wingo's report came out via Twitter at about 2 o'clock. So let's go back a little bit of history on Trey Wingo. Former ESPN, host of a lot of their NFL programming. He and ESPN had a parting of ways. I don't know if it was mutual or not, but nonetheless, he's no longer affiliated with ESPN. But he has sort of buddied up with Aaron Rodgers over the last couple of years for whatever reason. And Trey Wingo was the one who first reported that Aaron and the Jets were going to meet in California, which set off a firestorm of activity and reporting last week. Aaron Rodgers is the same guy who on Pat McAfee a couple of weeks ago sort of backhanded slapped Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter saying, hey, they're good at their job, but they don't know me, and they don't know blank about my situation. So something tells me, knowing Aaron the way I know him, he is more than happy to tee up Trey Wingo with a little bit of information, but he ain't giving Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter anything. So now Schefter and Rappaport have to go back to their team sources and try and figure out what's going on. And meanwhile, the Jets are saying, look, we're trying here. I don't even know if he wants to play. And the Packers are saying there's nothing done yet, even though I'm sure they're working on it. So he has left insiders scrambling for information. I'm holding on to the Trey Wingo tweet because it had nothing to do with compensation, money, draft picks, just saying that a deal is right there with Rodgers and the Jets. So I'm holding on to that. I'd still be very shocked if Aaron retired. I do think it's the Jets or retirement, but his time in Green Bay is done.
So is it the details of a contract to be worked out with the Jets and the trade? Obviously, that matters because you have two teams, not one. He's not a free agent, Packers. And I'll make another point. I'm curious what you think about this. This is one of those moments. This is just me saying this. I didn't get this from any reporter or somebody that covers the NFL. This is where the absence of an owner, one person, dictates the storyline when it comes to things like this. We have groupthink, coach, GM, Mark Murphy, all trying to figure out the psyche of something that probably can't be figured out, which is Aaron Rodgers.
I think they're in lockstep on this one, though. I think they're done with Rodgers. I really do believe that they've kind of moved on. It has a lot to do with what Mark Murphy had to say last week, Friday, using the state high school girls basketball championship as his platform, which, right, I thought was a little strange. Mm-hmm. But regardless, he said what he said, and he clearly used Aaron's name in the past tense and clearly indicated their wish is to move on from Aaron. What Brian Gutekunst didn't say at the scouting combine, I think, was also interesting. And we just haven't heard from Matt LaFleur really since the end of the season. So perhaps his views have changed, because it went from, yeah, we want him back, gives us our best chance to win, and this thing has slowly snowballed into he's gone. I don't see a path back to the Packers for Aaron Rodgers. I really don't. It's retirement or another team. And at this point, anyway, the Jets appear to be in the lead for that team. Now, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but Alan Lazard and the Jets, right, there's some smoke there. Nathaniel Hackett has something to do with it, the former Packers offensive coordinator. But it's certainly a piece that Aaron's familiar with playing with on his side. So that could be something that helps make this deal a little bit sweeter.
Do you take anything away from the Cobb? I think it was a tweet or somebody mentioned this yesterday that he's going to play football this year. Does that have anything to do with this?
I don't think it'll be in Green Bay. though I think it would behoove the Packers to have a veteran wide receiver somehow, some way. Randall Cobb's asking price is going to go down. He's 33. I actually thought he played pretty well last year. He was a good fit in the Packers offense. You're always worried about durability. But again, you know, Aaron was standing up in his wedding a few years back. So their friendship is no joke. That's legitimate. And I don't know if he's going to get Mercedes Lewis and Robert Tonyan in New York. But yes, if I'm Aaron Rodgers and I want to play with my buddies, Randall Cobb can still produce. I would absolutely hope that Randall would come play in New York.
Greg Matzik joining us on WTMJ. I had a conversation with my buddies about the legacy of Aaron Rodgers. And obviously, we all remember 2010, the Super Bowl 45. Tremendous victory. Great for the franchise. It had been a while since the Favre victory in 96. His legacy, though, for the last, 11 seasons, 12 seasons, is getting close but not getting back. So does any of this nonsense, the shenanigans of Aaron Rodgers, the sensory deprivation, the ayahuasca, all that stuff, does that dampen or lessen his legacy, and does it leave a bad taste in the mouth of Packers fans?
I think no and yes. I do think some are really turned off by sweat lodges in Peru and kind of just the strange off-field sort of lifestyle that Aaron leads. That does not bother me. It's different. It's something that I probably wouldn't do. But hey, Aaron Rodgers maybe doesn't like to cook, and I love to cook. So hey, we live our lives. As for his legacy, I can separate all of those things. I can look at what he's done on the field and say, man, that was 15 years of incredible quarterback play. And it was. And it was also a down year last year, which has opened the door for the Packers to make the move I thought they were going to make a couple of years ago, prior to Aaron winning his third and then fourth MVP. So I think his legacy is still one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. When you talk about the best quarterbacks in Packers history, there's three names on that list, as much as Lynn Dickey would like to be involved. I think he's on the outside of those three looking in. And if Brett Favre can come back to a bowl full of Packers fans and receive a standing ovation after playing for the Minnesota Vikings, then I don't think Aaron Rodgers' legacy will be impacted when he comes back to Green Bay for a number enshrinement, some sort of ceremony where he's honored on the field. Whenever that happens, I don't think fan sentiment will be so jaded that they don't give him his proper applause.
Here's a question you can't answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. When do you think we might know the answer to the trade question, retirement question, whatever it is?
An hour?
Really?
2 hours?
That soon?
24 hours before 3 o'clock tomorrow?
Oh, you're just saying every possibility. I get you.
I mean, that's all in play, right? I think the more this drags on, I've heard so many people have hit me up on Twitter and sent a lot of emails, and a lot of very interesting emails from a lot of our fans, which I do appreciate. The one pushback I have is I don't think Aaron's really holding the Packers hostage here. Yes, there are some moves I think the Packers will like to make, but typically free agency is kind of an eye roll. They're not legal tampering period players when it comes to outside free agents. They're bringing back Keyshawn Nixon on a $6 million deal for 1 year, worth up to $6 million. That's great. Mm-hmm. Your best special teamer from a year ago, great return man. So I don't think the Packers' plans are overly disrupted by Aaron. He's holding the Jets hostage here. Now, if I'm the Jets, now I'm getting a little worried, right? Jimmy Garoppolo's in Las Vegas. Mike White, who was maybe the Jets' most effective quarterback last year, even though he was a backup, is off to Miami on a 2-year incentive-laden deal. Like, quarterbacks are starting to go. Derek Carr went to the Saints a couple weeks ago. So now if I'm New York, I'm trying to amass some pieces here, make some bold moves, and I'm being held up because I don't know if Aaron wants to play. The Packers have their quarterback for next year, and it's not Aaron Rodgers.
Well, the good thing is there's Jordan Love. We'll see how that works out. Greg Matzik, as always, thank you. Stay tuned. If something breaks, we'll obviously bring you back in. Appreciate the knowledge and the experience of dealing with stories like this.
More to come. Stay tuned.
All right, Greg Matzik joining us at WTMJ. Quick break. Lots more to get to. What do you think about Aaron Rodgers' imminent departure? Retirement? I don't think so. Jets? Maybe. Packers? I don't think so. You heard what Greg said. Quick break. Yes, Aaron Rodgers watch. I've started the clock now. I stayed away from it yesterday, but something seems to be imminent, and I really, really doubt he's going to retire, so I'm not all in on that. Now, I wasn't aware of this, so texter on the old National Bank Talk and Text Line, you can join us, 855-616-1620, says, really looking forward to seeing John McCure eat the paper note that he wrote that Aaron Rodgers will not play for anyone But Green Bay this year, he promised to do it. I have not heard of this. That would suck for John, man. So, like, how? I wonder how big the is it? An 8.5 by 11? Is it a little scrap of paper? What is it, dude? It's not looking good for you. You got to wash that down with some beer or something. That's not going to be a good taste. Just a few more comments. We'll get to news here in a second. We'll stay on this for a bit. I'm curious what you think. Everybody who thinks they know don't know, including the experts. He mentioned some of the big names: Rappaport, Adam Schefter, who's on our partner station here at ESPN 94.5 on Wednesdays. He'll have a lot to say tomorrow. And, of course, Greg Matzik. And he came right out of the gate. He was all over it, clowning us in Green Bay, clowning us as fans, question mark, perhaps. And I said this to somebody last night. You won't find a bigger fan of Aaron Rodgers than me. But there are limits to my patience on this nonsense. I've put up with the misleading comments. I've put up with the self-help hippie stuff. And I've joked about it. We've had fun with it. And save the text. I'm not trashing someone who's trying to help their mental health. I get it. But he also didn't have to make all that public, and he did. So choices made by both consumers of news and the people that make the news. But at some point, he's going to have to decide here. And I said it with Greg, and I say it again. The franchise is being held hostage here. And I can't imagine a scenario where the Jets thing doesn't work out, he doesn't retire, and he just comes back and plays? That seems crazy to me. What do you think? 855-616-1620. We'll wrap that around the bottom of the hour news break. Our time here at WTMJ is 9:31. From our breaking news center, Debbie Lazica. Well done, sir. Yes, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Will Mr. Rogers return to Green Bay? I think the answer to that is no. You heard Greg rather declaratively say no. I agree with Greg. I just, at this point, and I've had a lot of side conversations away from the show about Aaron Rodgers, the biggest fans, I'm one of them, they've had enough. Every offseason now in the last couple have been drama-filled, right? Somebody said all the girlfriend stuff. I could care less about that. He can do what he wants. He's a single guy, right? You can have as many girlfriends as you would like. Knock yourself out. Good-looking guy, great-looking girlfriends. Who out there would not raise their hand and say, sign me up for that? Also, by the way, I'm a millionaire. Everybody would sign up for that. I hope he finds love at some point. Set that all aside. One of the things that I've said, and I'm really interested in what you have to say about this, 855-616-1620, as much as I like to focus on the sports part of this, there's so much more here. There's so much more meat on the bone. A player who's not all in. I made this point last week when I jumped on Gabe, Jen, and Chewy in the morning. I think it was Friday morning, Thursday or Friday morning. If you're not all in, that generally doesn't lead to Super Bowls. Why do I say that? Because the last couple years, I say 3 years, Packers have had significant chances to get back. Two failures at Lambeau, right? Hard to get past those. I don't think Aaron Rodgers played stellar in those games. Of course, last season, the closer, losing a game that guarantees you'll make the playoffs, stumbled through that effort. If you're not fully committed to wanting to get to the Super Bowl versus whatever demons you have in your head, if that's the right word, or whatever concerns, self-doubts, introspection, whatever the term you want to use, whatever that is going on, detracts from the on-field play, my opinion. Is he a brilliant quarterback? Not in question. One of the most talented of all time? Not in question. But I'll use the same example I used with Gabe Neitzel. Tom Brady, he moves from the Patriots to the Buccaneers. Still wanted to play football at the highest level, the greatest winning quarterback of all time, not even close, 7 Super Bowl wins. And he won a Super Bowl. But then the indecision crept in, the retire, unretire, the not all in, things swirling around him, a divorce, as unfortunate as that is. What happened to the Buccaneers, led by Tom Brady? I think they were 7-9, still made the playoffs, but didn't do much. It's the little things. It's the just the lack of motivation beyond what a normal player has that takes it to the next level. It's where Patrick Mahomes is right now. He is where Aaron Rodgers was in 2010. Absolutely. And then life happens. We'll see if Patrick, I mean, because there's already people comparing Patrick Mahomes to Tom Brady. And to those people, I say, slow your roll, folks. Slow your roll. Let's see what happens. Because life has something to say about it. What happens around you, contracts, realities of salary caps, all that stuff. Bottom line for me, and I'd love to hear from you, 855-616-1620. I got a ton of texts on this, which I'll get to after the break. I've enjoyed the heck out of watching Aaron Rodgers play quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Seen him in person about 100 times. Loved it. Every bit of it. Really since he was drafted in 2005, really since 2008. It's been a thrill to watch that as someone who's watched both Bart Starr and Brett Favre earlier. We have enjoyed a banquet of riches when it comes to quarterback play. And I have no idea what Jordan Love's going to be, but boy, I wish him well. Because we know what happens in the eras, those of us who are old enough, when you don't have great quarterback play. The team tends to suffer. So I'm hopefully optimistic about Jordan Love. I do think today or tomorrow's decision day, just because that's the reality of the NFL, something has to happen. Draft looming at some point next month. Things have to start falling into place. And this isn't a free agent situation. Otherwise, that probably would have been done already. I am intrigued by the idea that Alan Lazard now is in the mix, apparently, for the Jets. Of course, Nathaniel Hackett is over there as well. That does intrigue me, does suggest, as well as the clearing of cap space, that this is going to happen. But I tell you, now this side story about the text about John McCure, that is fascinating to me. I would show up for that. I would show up for that moment when John McCure has to eat a note that he wrote that Aaron Rodgers is going to play for the Packers this year. And maybe John will be right. Who knows? In the crazy mixed-up world of Aaron Rodgers, maybe John is right. But I don't think so. And that will be something to watch. All right, your text and your calls, 855-616-1620. We are officially on my show on Rodgers Watch. That's next. Are you on the Aaron Rodgers love train? I think that's a lot of people getting off the train. That would be my assessment. To the Old National Bank talk and text line we go. This one, that's funny. Act your age, not your jersey number. Okay. Interesting story. If he does go to the Jets, of course, the Joe Namath, who also wore 12, Hall of Fame quarterback. What do you do there? So I made the joke off the show earlier. Just to irritate everybody, wear number one. just to poke the bear a little bit. Ah, I'm number one. Tom Brady's retired, supposedly. We'll see. Although rumors about Miami. Boy, if he unretires again, that's a chink on the old legacy. Let's see. From the 262, no matter how this plays out, Rodgers definitely won't retire now because if he did, he'd need to share his induction into the Hall of Fame with Tom Brady, and he'd never do that. Yeah, although I don't think I think he's addressed that and said it's not a big deal, but maybe it is. From the 414, I'm pretty sure he said he'd eat paper if Aaron did play for Green Bay. So I got two different things. Someone straighten it out. Is John McCure in the building? Because that's a whole different story. Texter, we must get to the bottom of this. I just want to see John McCure eat paper, however that happens. Whatever needs to happen, I want to see him eat that piece of paper. 920, don't care anymore what Aaron does. Just announce it already. Packers definitely should get something for him, though. Say goodbye to Lazard, too. Time to move forward. I don't disagree with that. It is time. It's love time. Love train. Jordan Love. Producer Tommy's on it today. He's got game. He's showing up. Producer Brandon, a little under the weather. A little under the weather. That's how we call it now. Under the weather. Because I'm a son of a weatherman. That's why I say it that way. Peter from River West. I believe he's going to the Jets for 2 years and then be traded to Detroit. He'll play the same as Brett Favre did. Well, that was the Vikings. You mean the Vikings? 920. I'm a huge Rodgers fan. I've never wanted him to leave, but after this, I don't think he can be a Packers player anymore. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of – bridge has been burned, right? 855-616-1620. Got a great email from somebody, and I'm going to try to mix it into the next few minutes while I'm still taking your calls and texts, 855-616-1620. And I made this point with Greg, and maybe I didn't make it as strongly as I wanted to. Look, I'm a huge fan of the Packers organization. I've worked with Mark Murphy. When I worked in PR, we worked alongside the Packers on several big projects. So, well acquainted with him, I have a lot of respect for him. He's going to be retiring in a couple years when he turns 65. So I set that aside. But one of the things I said with Greg is there is a big difference between having one owner of a team, a franchise, and having sort of groupthink. Now, Greg said, and I don't disagree with this either, that LaFleur and Gutekunst and Murphy are all on the same page. Perhaps. But at some points, that groupthink may have said or maybe come to the realization, you know, is this all worth it? And certainly what happened last year with the team underperforming, not making the playoffs, finishing under 500, Rodgers with a subpar Rodgers season, still pretty good compared to most quarterbacks, but not what we're expecting from Aaron Rodgers, given that he was the two-time reigning NFL MVP. I have to think at some point, three people or however many people are involved in that decision. Sometimes delay is the inevitable, right? You can say all the proper things, and you can take whatever you want from Mark Murphy's comments at that WIAA event. Kind of a weird place, as Greg said, to make those kind of comments. But I think they're prepared to move on. And the realization for me is, at this point, it would seem even more awkward to have Aaron Rodgers back than it has perhaps last year or the year before. Diane says, let him go. I'd like to have some fun in football again instead of drama. That's the thing. The key word is drama. I'm done with the drama. Just play the game. Win the games. Get back to the Super Bowl. And I made this point, I think, Friday. Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, all around the age of 26 when they won their first Super Bowl. Jordan Love is 24. He can be 26 at some point. If he's something, if he's worthy of the pick that they made a few years ago. That's a great story, too. That's a tremendous story, and certainly we'd have Vikings, Lions, and Bears fans ripping their hair out if he turns out to be something. So I'm all in on that story, too. That storyline is fascinating to me. A few more texts before we go to break. Let's see. This is the big question. If Rodgers goes to New York, will he be willing to go to non-mandatory practices if he would have done that last year? The Packers would have had a more successful year. That's been a beef of mine as well. All the self-help stuff, the getting my head straight, well, everybody else is showing up for the most part. You're the leader of the team. Do you want to get back to the Super Bowl? You want to win a Super Bowl? That might have shown a little something extra that maybe provides some morale slash impetus for a little higher level of performance. Maybe, maybe not. 414, I love watching Rodgers play and will continue to follow him after he leaves the Packers. My only frustration is we would have tried to move him after a second MVP season. Imagine that what we would have gotten. Yeah, of course. That would have been the most logical time, right? Then you wouldn't have potentially this huge financial burden hanging over the Packers' heads with dead cap money, if he does get traded. But again, two-time MVP, I think I told the story when all this conversation was starting last year. There's only been like one MVP who was ever traded after winning the MVP. And off the top of my head, I don't recall who that was. But nobody trades a two-time MVP. It just never happens, especially when that two-time MVP is the quarterback of your team. It just doesn't happen. Never happens. So that was not likely. Lou from West Dallas. Crazy how fast times go by. It seemed like yesterday Brett Favre's dad died and he lit up the Raiders on Monday Night Football. One of the greatest games I've ever seen, greatest performances. Now that Rodgers' era is over in a blink of an eye, it's two generations, it's two decades, Lou. Almost two decades. Drafted in 2005. It's 2023. But if it's time to move on, it is time to move on, even for the worst, Lou from West Dallas. I expected this one. I get it. That's why I stayed away from the story yesterday. You're giving this story too much ink. I know this about Wisconsinites. They love beer. They love cheese. For the most part, they love sausages. Not everybody, but for the most part. And they love the Green Bay Packers. When the four-time MVP, Super Bowl winning, one of the highest-rated quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, is making an imminent decision on going to another team, kind of a story that, being a news talk station, kind of a story we're going to talk about. But that's just me. But I'm thinking it's time for a change. Get out of your way. Producer Tommy did some research during the break there. Norm Van Brocklin, Jim Brown, they retired after winning the MVP, but there really hasn't been a trade of an MVP. So that's why it seemed unlikely that that was going to happen, especially a two-time reigning MVP. Was before last season, was having some pretty strong seasons. Now, it is correct that in the biggest games, the last game at Lambeau, the last three seasons, he underperformed. And whether that's the little bit of a creeping piece of his mind that says, I got other things going on in there, I don't know. Because trying to get in the head of anybody is impossible, and especially Aaron Rodgers. Unless you're the latest trendy, latest trendy self-help thing, I was going to say. All right. Since we had a kind of a sports hour for the most part, I thought we'd end it with this. So I like the show Jeopardy, but I've also said for a long time, I've had this argument with relatives, there's smarts, there's book smart, and then there's like just street smart. Well, we're going to play for, it's like a minute something, but it's a clip of Jeopardy. And the category is sports. And it shows you the, what's the right word? The lack of like awareness of like, I'm going to say it, geeks to other things around them in the universe. Like I always like to say this. I have a little bit of knowledge about a lot of things, so I can dip into almost any subject. Well, these folks, these players, couldn't quite figure out the sports category on Jeopardy.
In the sport? In the sport for 1,000.
Chucker, gagbit, mallet, a lot of money. Hannah.
What is roulette?
No. Caleb.
What is horse racing?
No. That would be polo. Hannah.
In the sport for 800.
Penalty killing, plus minus, the five hole, the biscuit, that's what everyone's chasing.
That's hockey.
In the sport for 600, please.
Eight count, accidental butt, cut man for said accidental butt. That's boxing.
Hmm. Let's do in the sport for 400, please.
Best ball, casual water, closed face, and the absolute worst, shank. Caleb.
What is water polo?
No. That's golf. Caleb.
Let's finish out in the sport. I want to get rid of it.
Inherited runners, appeal play, pickoff. That's baseball. We kind of covered them all.
The internet's going to love that.
Oh my goodness, Caleb. Like, get outside your bubble, dude. Stop reading the dictionary every day, or in the old days, the Encyclopedia Britannica. Come on, dude. Some of that stuff was easy. The golf one. How do you not know that? Which illustrates my point. Smart people, sometimes, they can be really, really smart about one specific thing, and all the rest, not so smart. All right, we're going to shift gears after the break. 4 of 10 coming up. I just said that we don't really do the 4 of 10 anymore, but we're going to call it that anyway today, because I'm feeling it, feeling it, feeling it. Hopefully you are as well. The news, my friends, is next, right here in WTMJ.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday edition. We have two giveaways today, by the way, which I'll tell you about in a little bit. We'll do one in the 10 o'clock hour, dinner for at 10, and then, of course, the 11 o'clock hour will be our second one, and then we'll do it three more times this week. So pay attention. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Stop what you're doing. Listen to the show. Everything else can wait. Plus, we're monitoring the Rogers story. So you want to know the latest? Well, no better place than WTMJ. All right. If we all look back 3 years ago, and we have St. Patrick's Day coming up, of course, this Friday. That was the day, of course, that the COVID hit the fan, as they say. I edited myself there. My question is this, and I've read a lot now, and I've spent some time last weekend just digging into this story, and I'll give you some details, but I'm really more interested in the what have we learned piece of this story. What's our takeaway? And even more fascinating, a deep dive on if it happened again, I'm just guessing sitting here in this radio seat 3 years later almost, we'd have a much different reaction. 855-616-1620. The old National Bank talk and text line. You can join us, text or phone. I won't bite. So March 2020. St. Patrick's Day, when everything got shut down, all the parties got shut down, people were mad. Unless you lived in some parts of Wisconsin, we basically just didn't change anything. But that's a conversation for a different moment. Masking, isolating, washing your groceries, everyone, that was a thing. Remote work, remote learning. We kind of all knew about the risk of pandemics, but we hadn't really seen a widespread one in decades. Hospitals overwhelmed. I'm setting the table for what was actually going on at that time. Right? Hospitals overwhelmed. Intensive care units had to expand. Healthcare workers, God bless those folks, because not only on the work side, they had to work their butts off with an unknown at the time risk. How does it spread? Does it spread easily? How can you prevent the spread? No vaccine at the time. All these unknowns. Pleading for help. Under the Trump administration, vaccine is developed. Some missteps, certainly, with communication in that administration. Joe Biden takes office. Vaccine is pushed out. Many, many Americans, millions of Americans getting the vaccine, the boosters, all that. So that's the scene. And now we're in this, I would call it Monday morning quarterback phase of looking back 3 years later. Anybody think we're in a better place? I don't. We may be on the virus itself, perhaps, sure. Seem to have saved some lives in the process. Very expensive process, I might add. Trillions of dollars. One could actually make the leap that much of the economic struggles we're facing now, inflation, recession, deeply impacted by a decision to put all that money, push it all out from the federal government, spending like we've never seen before in our nation's history, but set that aside as well. What have we learned? The answer is nothing, not a thing. Other than those folks working in medicine who came up with a vaccine that I think saved lives. That's my opinion. The reality is, science is being questioned in ways it's never been questioned before, which is not necessarily a bad thing, except, though, that one of the side effects of questioning the vaccine for COVID is that all vaccines are being questioned. Proven, time-tested, life-saving vaccines are now being treated as if the vax injury side of that story is vastly underreported, some people say, not me, and that the benefits of vaccines are overplayed or overreported. Again, not me. Baseline, lives saved. I took the vaccine. Millions of Americans did. But the attacks on scientists, on healthcare workers, on medicine, on science continue. So 3 years later, we've learned nothing when it comes to an appreciation of why science matters. Common sense, logic, thrown out the window. in lieu of conspiracy theories and sometimes utter nonsense. What have we learned? 855-616-1620. Trust has decayed. We don't trust anybody. I haven't dug it out in a while. I'll do it after the break. Institutions now that we don't trust solely because, and take, you can take this out of COVID, because one or two individuals with tremendous power questioned the ethics of people like Vice President Mike Pence and agencies, which I'll list after the break. So trust has been blown up. Goodness, even the FBI and Department of Justice are now suspects. Not by most of us, but by enough people that it has caused significant concerns in our population. I think we've learned nothing. Zero. And that is a fact that I think people have to wrestle with. Because the bottom line here is, at some point in our future, we may be dealing with this problem again. And I've seen nothing from our elected leaders, very little from the loudest members of our society that suggest we're going to handle the next one rationally, sanely, using our brains versus our little card or membership card to a political party. That's my thoughts. Love to hear yours. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. You're listening to WTMJ. What have we learned 3 years? I use the St. Patrick's Day because that's really when everything shut down here in Wisconsin 3 years ago. 2020, now 2023. St. Patrick's, of course, coming up this Friday. Go to the phone lines, as he often does. Mike from Illinois leads us off. Happy Tuesday, Mike.
Happy Tuesday, happy Pi Day, and another beautiful day in northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin.
Gotta love that. What do you think?
Absolutely. Well, I think that, I guess, as I was telling the producer that, what I've learned is that we are more divided than ever. Certainly there were hints of that in 2016 election, the 2020 election, but COVID just brought up the divisions more than anything else I've ever seen before. And obviously, you know, something as big as that will do that. It will expose the divide. And probably go back because it just seems like it's worse than ever. And I try to be an optimist, but it just does seem, you know, like I've never seen it like this.
Yeah, you are an optimist. And I think you reflect, I think, the common sense look at this that, yeah, we are finding ways to be even more divided. We are criticizing agencies and individuals, not because they were perfect, but because they didn't have all the answers immediately, like we think some people think, and it's a mistaken belief, that elected officials can solve everything immediately.
Right. And, you know, obviously, the political sides were on very opposite sides of that issue and other issues as well, obviously, but that was a big one.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike, calling from Illinois. Let's go to Roger. I think he disagrees from Sheboygan. Hey, Roger, welcome to the show. Happy Tuesday.
Hi, Mike. I totally disagree with you on this.
Okay, tell me why.
And I'm not a big fan of his, but the reason I say that, I think when President Trump came on in the very beginning and he said it's not a serious thing and we can control it, the reason he did that was the good thought that he had that the whole country would absolutely panic if he said everything he knew about it.
So you think he was trying to calm the population by...
Absolutely. Okay. Five-star, absolutely.
Interesting way to look at it.
And that's, in my opinion, that's the best thing he ever did. He did a lot of screwy things, but he was trying to hold us all together as a group and not go and empty the supermarket shelves and do all sorts of other strange things.
That's a fair point. Thanks for the call, Roger. I mean, I also give the Trump administration credit for developing the vaccine, being part of that process. And some people don't, but I do. And I know that the vaccine started to be implemented after he left office. Let's go to someone who actually might have more knowledge than we have. Jackie joins us from Columbia County. Welcome to the show, Jackie. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. So I actually agree with your last caller. I think that Trump was trying to mitigate the panic. I really do, because, I mean, we haven't had a true pandemic in, gosh, almost 100 years. Mm-hmm. So this was something unprecedented that an American president hadn't dealt with in, you know, the foreseeable past. So it was really kind of interesting to see how that all played out. Do I think that it all went well? No.
Work
in infectious disease myself.
Yeah, I saw that. What do you think you've learned from this 3 years?
I have learned how gullible people are.
Yes.
I have learned how people will question my medical degree over what they read online, and that's always incredibly frustrating. I mean, it's a good thing to question science. Don't get me wrong; it really is. Scientists question each other. That's why we have multiple people doing the same type of research, so we can look at everybody's data and see what everybody has, and then you bring all that data together, and you kind of go through it and you see what the outlying factors are. And you see what you can learn from it as a group, and that you glean information that way. And that's why we have Cochrane reviews. That's why we have study reviews. When you look at a pool of data, mm-hmm. and you see what you can learn from that. That's why you don't draw conclusions from one or two studies.
If this pops up again, and I don't want to predict something, because having gone through the last 2 years, I don't want to revisit that nightmare on anybody, but are we in a better place or are we in a worse place because of some of that questioning? I always question everything, but I also, the line for me is threatening people who disagree with you because you're questioning something. That's my line.
Oh, and if I could tell you the amount of times that I was threatened.
That just sickens me.
It really, and I was like, you know, during the height of the pandemic, I worked, the majority of my hours were spent in the ICU at Children's, and if I could tell people, oh, it doesn't really affect children. Well, come walk the halls with me. Come walk the halls with me and see these babies that are so incredibly sick. I can't even hug the parents that are standing, you know, in their children's room crying, asking what they did wrong. I think that absolutely changes you as a provider. I got in trouble one day for hugging a mom whose first baby was with us. She went back to work, heaven forbid, and her baby got COVID. He was just a tiny little guy, and she kept saying, "What did I do wrong? Honey, you didn't do anything wrong. This is not your fault." And it really, at that point, it was me as a mom connecting with another mom. And yeah, I mean, that's what we lived through. And for people to question our judgment, for people to get so angry about it, and now vaccinations, period, are down across the state. We're seeing reduced levels.
That's the reality.
Of polio,
yes.
Vaccines, of MMR, and new and upcoming vaccines are being tested by the FDA now. And there's a question of, are people even going to accept this? Should we even look at vaccine medicine as a way of combating illness? Because people are going to question it so much that it's not going to be worth it. You know, it kind of, those are the questions that we're talking about right now. Those are the things that are being raised. And it really, you know, shakes me to my core to think, you know, we're going to have, you know, tons of measles outbreaks. And we had an issue with polio in New York. And what's going to happen?
Hey, Jackie, real quick, because I got to get to news to a break here. But when people say out loud, often on the radio and TV, we're out of the pandemic, it's over, nothing to worry about. What do you say to that?
I tell them, come say that to the husband who just lost his wife to COVID. Come say that to the patient who we had to send home with a pacemaker because we couldn't keep his heart rate above 36 because of damage due to COVID. Come talk to them.
Thanks for your great service. Thanks for your work in healthcare, and thanks for taking some time to share your thoughts. Jackie calling us from Columbia County. It's hard for me to question any of that, because this is somebody who actually works there. And I said what my line was. question everything, question whatever you want. But when it goes past questioning and you start threatening, I've got a problem with that and you. No place. We have healthcare providers, as Jackie just said, who have been threatened over and over again. Local safety folks, health and safety folks working in municipalities across this country, they've been threatened, called names. That's my takeaway. You ask me today, March 14th, 2023, what we've learned. Not much, folks. Not much. And the Monday morning quarterback that's going on when it comes to vaccines, healthcare in general, everything has now led to us questioning all of the agencies, all of the organizations, and frankly, is feeding the frenzy. And you know what I'm going to say next, that all government is bad. But without any form of government, we have chaos, folks. I'm not signing up for that. I'll give you my list off the top of my head of organizations and things we don't trust anymore. A lot of it having to do with the pandemic after this on WTMJ. A lot of texters saying the same thing I thought when I was listening to Jackie speak about COVID and all the implications for healthcare workers. That's a hero. Somebody just does their job. Take all the abuse, and trust me, they got abuse. I'll stay on this because I want to try to figure out. I did get some tweets that suggest some positives. I want to vet those a little bit on what we've learned 3 years later. I use the St. Patrick's dates as the three-year markers. That's when everything really shut down here in Wisconsin with the governor's emergency order. Our news time here at WTMJ, 10:31. All right, let's do this. I got two chances to win today. Let's do one right now. Home and Garden Show presented by Unilock, the Scott State Fair Park. March 25th, April 2nd at the Expo Center out there. I've been to this. It's fantastic. Two tickets, pair of tickets. Caller number six, 855-616-1620. I'll do one more giveaway later in the show, but right now, dial it up. Producer Tommy, waiting for your calls, 855-616-1620. Caller number six, win a pair of tickets to the Home and Garden Show. A fantastic event. If you're doing anything in your house or your garden, exterior, this is the place to go. I got so many good ideas going to this show, so we'll do one more of those sometime later today. All right, I promised I would do this. I don't have the list in front of me. I'm just going off the top of my head. Talking about the pandemic, we started the hour talking about it, still talking about it. Great call. My healthcare provider, a lot of folks echoing what I thought. That's a hero, folks, dealing with what they have had to deal with the nonsense. So it's just some of the obvious ones. And some of these are pandemic-related, some are not, but they all kind of lead to the same thing. Distrust, mistrust, outright hatred of organizations that for many years kept us safe, kept us healthy, kept us together. National Institute of Health. CDC, Center for Disease Control, FBI, Department of Justice, right? Local health directors, little communities, large communities, anybody working in health and healthcare, emergency room employees having to deal with the COVID reality. Even clerks in stores. I'm not wearing a mask. I don't want to. Well, the sign says you got to wear one. You've put their job in this weird world of protest and distrust. They're just trying to do their job, folks. And then it expanded. School boards, school districts, police, of course. Right? Can't trust the police. Look what happened. Of course, not thinking beyond that to life without police or life with less police, which even our current president, Joe Biden, says is not a viable option. That doesn't matter. I know better. Who are you going to put your faith in? Militias? Please. Walking around with camo gear that you bought on the internet doesn't make you a leader, doesn't make you someone that would be responsible in a life and death situation. Generally just makes you a knucklehead. I have a lot of texts on this. I'm going to spend a few more minutes and we're going to move on. But I wanted to give the texters some love because they took the time to write the text. I always appreciate that. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talking text line. And there was some people that said we have learned. From the 630, thanks for the long distance listen. There have been profound changes in our society due to COVID. Cities have closed off streets and opened up outdoor seating for restaurants. All of our work activities have changed considerably. Many of us have slowed down. Those are fair points. I get those. Now, I would argue that if you ask restaurants, is it easier to have an outdoor seating area? Probably not. They have trouble getting people to work inside. And, of course, in a climate like ours, that's not a 24/7, 365 option, unless you have heaters, which then adds cost back on the provider, which is the restaurant operators. The work thing's interesting as well. You can make a case that remote work has changed the workplace. Now, for every person that says that, I can show you studies that go both ways. Some it's made us more efficient, some it hasn't. And the reality for businesses, some of them is they have expensive offices that they've leased out or own. You ship all your employees away, you're paying for space you don't need. So that reality is not as clear cut. A lot of people weighed in on the Trump comment that one of the callers made. I gave him some credit. I get the point that what he was trying to do, this is what he says he was trying to do, was calm the population, not scare them. Difficult conversations, because I've had them as a leader. Not easy to do. And the words calm and reassure are certainly two words, two ideas that leaders have to pay attention to. When someone calms by maybe misleading, I think the reassure part at some point breaks down. But I gave him credit. Certainly could have been easy. Nothing was expected. Economy was booming at the time of the pandemic. That all crumbled. That's not easy for anybody to deal with, especially someone who has not worked in government, which is Donald Trump. Let's see. From the 262, I think we've learned a lot. We've learned that if we don't get out and vote, we are going to be represented by idiots that play to get a soundbite and donations could care less about serving us. If I had a bell, I'd ring it. The idiot factor of what passes as political discourse is off the charts. If you had one of those graphs, arrow is pointing straight up. Not at an angle, not a 45, straight up. Idiocy. Knuckleheadism. Stupidity. And I'll go back to what I said before. It's okay to support and question. Same time. Threatening, not okay. From the 414, this is a pretty simple comment, but I think it speaks to what I was talking about. The downplaying of the virus costs people their lives. And the dirty little secret about all of this, 3 years later, and I use the St. Patrick's Day as the marker, 3 years this Friday, when everything shut down in Wisconsin and everything pretty much shut down everywhere. We haven't learned, really. It's increased distrust. It's ramped up threats of violence. Certainly has ramped up the hate. But for me, the reality has always been, and this was a test of our will as a country. And we didn't pass the test. Because when I hear elected officials, especially now, questioning everything that was done in the spring of 2020, as if they knew now what they knew then what they know now, is disingenuous and is the definition of Monday morning quarterback. You didn't have that knowledge base. At the time, we knew that seniors were dying in nursing homes at an explosive rate from a disease that was apparently just transmitted very easily. You don't think it was a proper response to deal with that reality and do something about it? And I understand now the motivation for doing that. Because if you acknowledge the risk and the threat of a virus like COVID-19, you have to challenge other perceptions that you have about people, government, and party. And that's uncomfortable. And I will call that the Trump effect. You can easily take anything Donald Trump did, or any president really, and cast it in a negative light or a positive light, strictly based on your party ideology. Easy to do. The Trump example that the caller cited is perfect evidence of that. Was it calming or was it outright lying to the American people? Two different perspectives on the same conversation. The danger in all of this is not learning. Always has been. And I'd like to think 3 years later that we are moving in the right direction. But we're not, folks. It's evident every day. We love to fight about politics. We fill hours and hours of our day with some of this stuff. And what's it getting us? Not much. You can weigh in, 855-616-1620. Lots of stuff to talk about today. I'm just getting warmed up. I only got an hour 15 left, but I am just getting warmed up on this Tuesday, Pi Day. And that's P-I or P-I-E, because who doesn't like a good piece of apple pie? I got to check my show poll. We'll give you those updated results, because you guys were hammering that poll. And if you're not on the twits, which thinking about that reality for some people, probably a good decision. Although I do enjoy it sometimes. All right, quick break here on WTMJ. Happy Pi Day, everybody. Whether it's Pi or Pie, they're both good. The real one's Pi, though, the 3.14 and then a million. Actually, infinity numbers after that. Never ends, never stops. I watched an entire program on, I think it was Netflix, on the subject of infinity. It's fascinating because the way that scientists make sense out of it is using math, and man, I'm not a math person, but it's like insane. Then one guy was using a hotel example, and the hotel had an infinite number of rooms, and you would think just common sense would say, well, the next person that checks in would go to the only room available, the next room. But no, the way that it works, infinity works, is everybody has to move up one room, and then the first room is available for the new guest. That's how infinity works. It's amazing and well over my ability to reckon with. I wanted to revisit the show poll because it is Pi Day, and I'm the husband of a math teacher. And all the geeks out there celebrate Pi Day, of course. Although I don't see any pie anywhere on the premises. Not a single pie on the premise. So I asked a simple question. What is your favorite pie? So this is kind of an amazing horse race. So we have almost 300 votes already. Apple, everybody loves apple. Give me some heated up apple pie with some vanilla ice cream. Love it. 38.1%. Pumpkin coming in at a respectable 23. Sweet potato, it's delicious, but no one likes it. 0.7. That's like the lowest response percentage I've ever seen on my show poll in the history of the poll. 0.7. The interesting ones are the others. Now, I was thinking sweet pies, but like steak and kidney got a vote. Blueberry, key lime. Pizza pie, come on, that's lazy. I love pizza. I don't go around calling it a pizza pie. I know that's what some people do, but to me, it's not a pizza pie. It's just not. Banana cream, coconut cream, French silk. From Cindy, I'm not much of a pie lover, but give me a piece of homemade pecan pie, and I'm a happy lady. I like what you're saying there, Cindy. I like the thoughts. Shepherd's pie, come on. That's more of a dinner. Pie to me is dessert. Am I missing something? The PIE, it's dessert. And for all you math geeks out there, do you get offended if I correlate the PI to the PIE? Is that like troubled waters in the world of mathematicians and scientists? I got to know. I have to know the answer to that question. All right. They tell me I have to take another break. Congrats to, by the way, Carol from Keewascom. She was our first winner of the Home and Garden Show giveaway. One more chance in the 11 o'clock hour. Three more chances the rest of the week, sometime usually in the 10 o'clock hour, but sometimes I hold off a little bit just to see if you're listening, paying attention. I haven't mandated the full 3 hour requirement for the show yet, but I may put that in writing. So you check in at 9 and you have to listen to noon. I may have to put that in writing. That might be my decree for 2023 if you get the rhyme there. Poet didn't know it. All right, quick break here on WTMJ. I like this song. It's nice beat. I hear we have a joke of the day. let's rack that up, as they say. Let's rack that up and enjoy young Max. Gonna add some levity to the program.
Hey, all of you radio listeners, this is Max. I bet this joke of the week will make you hungry. Why did the cherry pie go to the dentist? To get a filling. Back to the Steve's Graffiti Show.
Oh, see what he did there? He had the pie thing, P-I-E and P-I, kind of, because pie's a circle. I love that. Thank you, young Max. All right, so I reached out to one of the hosts of the afternoon program, John McCure. I wanted to get the bottom line on this bet that he's made, apparently. And I've got conflicting both ways, so I just was trying to get to the heart of the matter. So I reached out to him, and he blew me off. He's in a very important meeting, he says. How much you want to make? He's stuffing his face with food right now, because he probably eats about 10:55. Yeah, he's probably eating. Just blew me off. Now, if he asked me to come on his show, which he hasn't done in a while, by the way, I would drop everything, run in the studio, go and answer his question. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt first time, blowing me off, but I'm certainly want to get to the bottom of the big bet. I love all the pie contents. We're gonna move on. After the top of the hour news here, we're going to be joined by my congressman, Brian Stile, 1st Congressional District in Wisconsin, talking about the bank collapse, SVB, the principal one, Silicon Valley Bank. And I'm curious what his take on all of this is. I did some research last night, a lot of listening, including some people who worked in both the Trump administration and in the Biden administration on what their thoughts are. And I will caution my listeners, fans of the show, don't let politics impact your decision-making or your thinking about what caused this. I have the answer for you, and it's not necessarily policy, not necessarily elected officials, but the finger actually gets pointed back to us, the collective us, collective we, and our inability to understand what happens when a run on the bank happens. So we'll ask Congressman Stile that question and probably some more about what's happening in Washington, D.C. That's all coming up. I can tell you a lot of love for the pie choices. Silk, is that chocolate silk? French silk, yeah. The key lime, never been a fan. Key lime pie. You have one bite of key lime pie, that's enough. You can walk away. You put a chocolate pie in front of me, I'm going to eat maybe one, probably two pieces, which is not good necessarily good for you. That's a lot of sugar. Bill, so what's your favorite pie, quickly?
Pumpkin.
Pumpkin? Do you get it more than just the big holidays? Do you get a pumpkin pie in like the middle of summer?
No.
So you don't seek it out.
It's a fall pie.
You think so? Because you can get pumpkin pie any time of year.
Yeah, no, then when it starts to get a little brisk outside, when it's, you know, Thanksgiving-y time.
In your entire life, have you ever made a pie yourself? I bet no.
I don't remember making a pie.
I don't see you as a baker. I see you as a consumer of baked goods.
I do some work in the kitchen.
Do you?
But
yeah,
I don't do pies.
What's your specialty dish? I'm just curious.
One specific dish that I make. I make some pretty good air fried chicken with some spices on them. Let's see what else. I make some.
Really? That sounds good, actually.
I do the air fryer pretty well. I use the Instapot pretty well.
Oh, you're using all the latest fads.
I've used your tomatoes.
Of course, you have. Those are delicious. Yeah. San Marzano, the best in the world.
Yeah, I've had some really good pasta sauce thanks to those.
All right, I look forward to having a meal sometime with you, and we can share some of that great food that you make. All right, the news is next. After
ramen noodles.
Ramen noodles. Now, if you made homemade ramen noodles, I'd be impressed. After the break, Congressman Brian Stile joins us on WTMJ.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Happy Pi Day. I'm not going to make them wait, because who wants to make their congressman wait? I don't want him mad at me. Not that he would. Congressman Brian Stile joins us. Good morning, Congressman.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So the big story, of course, in the last couple of days when we're talking about the economy is the collapse of SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, the government response that's essentially, it sounds like, protecting investors, those who have used that bank to utilize their deposits, to hold on to their money. I wanted to get your perspective on what this means, how does this happen, and really the government response. I want to get your take on all of that.
Yeah, so I, as you know, I sit on the House Financial Services Committee, so the committee with jurisdiction over these entities. I've been on the phone with the Federal Reserve, with the folks at the Treasury, FDIC, over the weekend and at the start of this week. I think there's a handful of things that immediately come to mind that are takeaways here. One, ultimately, we're going to have an after-action report and review of how the Federal Reserve, which is the oversight authority over these banks, how they behaved, and did they take the best, worst course of action? There was no good course of action. Did they take the best of the options that were presented in front of them? We'll have an opportunity to do a look back as we go forward. In these banks, there were some really unique circumstances that came to a head, both the concentration of deposits with specific venture capital, meaning kind of tech companies that were their key depositors, and then you had this quick increase in interest rates. But if we step away and we say, what's really driving this instability in our markets, it's really the fact that we have record high inflation that we haven't seen for over 40 years, and the Federal Reserve is using the blunt tool of higher interest rates to try to tame inflation. And if any blame is to be placed, it should be blamed on Washington for the policies that got us into this high interest rate environment in the first place. We spent too much money. We got to rein in spending. We've had a war on energy. We got to unleash American energy. And we still find too many people finding themselves on the sidelines rather than helping people get back to work so that we have participation levels as we did before the pandemic. If Congress gets to work with the president on those things, we can do a lot to bring inflation down and really help people.
So a couple of things on the reasoning. I happen to see, and I apologize, I don't have his name. He was one of the chief economic advisors for President Donald Trump. He said this is the old story of people, I don't want to use the word panic, but a run on the bank. There was some questions about their dollars. And once that happens, as anybody who's followed the history of bank collapses or bank problems, when that uncertainty creeps into it, it causes a run. And this individual said that's what happened here. Do you agree or disagree?
Very likely that was Gary Cohen. And in
yes,
many ways,
that's the name.
That's
yes.
What took, in many ways, that's what took place here. People got concerned, and now in the era of social media, remember a year ago we had meme stocks where, you know, the people were tweeting about a stock and we saw the stock price kind of fly all over the place. In many ways, this bank run was a social media driven bank run in the sense that people got concerned and started pulling their funds out of this bank in a very accelerated manner, so much so that they weren't able to meet that demand. When that happened is when the Federal Reserve made the decision that they had to step in. And what the Federal Reserve is trying to do is to prevent the contagion from traveling to other banks. And I think what's important is for a lot of your listeners and anyone with less than $250,000 in your bank account, which is the overwhelming majority of people, mm-hmm. self included, right, is that your bank account is secure. The banks are well capitalized overall, and you don't need to take action. It's these unique circumstances for these small number of banks. And the Federal Reserve jumped in to try to prevent exactly what you identified, this contagion and fear running rampant. And social media, just being the new technology, was clearly an aspect of how this moved as quickly as it did.
Congressman Brian Stile joining us this morning on WTMJ. Were you surprised or were you pleased in the way that the president and his administration reacted to this collapse of this bank?
Well, I would say that this is ongoing. And so I think the after action report is probably a few weeks away when we're able to pause, reflect, and look back as to whether or not this was the best course of action amongst those presented. And so the Federal Reserve acted very quickly Thursday, Friday, and throughout the weekend to prevent this from being a contagion through the banking system. Early indicators are that other banks are now holding up well, as noted. Most people would tell you that the vast majority of banks in the United States are well capitalized and the risk is quite low to other deposit holders. And so the after action report, I think, will come out as to how the Fed behaved. But I think we do have to pause and reflect and say, what's causing the broader instability in the market and in our financial system? And that's inflation. And that's clobbering people at the grocery store, at the gas pump. and across the board. And the quick inflation and the ramp up in interest rates is really the underlying cause of this bank run and of the need for the Federal Reserve to come in. If anything, it should crystallize our need in Washington to work between Republicans in the House and President Biden to come to the table to get our fiscal house in order and bring inflation down.
Yeah, latest CPI numbers coming in still around 6, still causing some heartburn for all of us who have to pay for things every month. One of the things I want to ask you about, I know you spend a lot of time when you're back in Wisconsin talking to voters, constituents, taxpayers, and I know that there's a lot of concern, this speaks to the uncertainty, about 401ks and their financial investments. When you're having those conversations, do you get a sense of that uncertainty? Or are people less confident than they were 4 years ago? Where are they at?
But I think a lot of people are concerned because they're looking at what's going on and they're saying, you know, our nation fiscally is not really on a path to stability, right? We can all kind of see the iceberg that's sitting out there in front of us in this giant ship. We can debate as to how big the iceberg is and how far in front of us it is. And that perception is sometimes a little difficult to reach consensus on. But I think we all recognize when we're spending way beyond our means, when we have inflation rearing its ugly head, that we're in we're in uncertain times. And what I have been pushing for is we need to come down and have that adult conversation across the aisle with the president and say, how do we get our fiscal house in order to bring stability back? Because it's imperative for seniors who are looking at their retirement accounts. Also, it's imperative for folks that are working where inflation is eating up more and more of their earnings, and they're feeling themselves falling further and further behind. So there's some real uncertainty in front of us. I think now is the moment in time where we should come together, have that adult conversation, and work to get our fiscal house in order.
How confident are you in the Fed and their ability to control inflation? They've certainly had rate increases over the past 2 years, and they were going to take a pause. I don't know if that's still going to be the case. We talked to one of our financial advisors, partner of WTMJ yesterday, who said it looks like that's off the table, that rate increase. What sense do you get about your confidence in Fed's policy decisions?
So Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, was in front of my committee on the financial services last week. We talked about that directly. Here's my concern. The Federal Reserve has one tool, and it's a blunt instrument to try to tame inflation. They can raise interest rates. And I might disagree with the gentleman that you referenced there. I think the Federal Reserve may continue to raise interest rates because as we saw today, inflation remains stubbornly high and eating away at folks' paychecks. And so the question then becomes, what else can we do besides relying on the blunt instrument of higher interest rates in the Federal Reserve? And I think the answer is pretty straightforward. We need to change the policies in Washington that are in many ways driving inflation. Energy costs are far too high. We need to unleash American energy. We still see a labor shortage, and we find far too many people who find themselves on the sidelines. We got to help those people get back to work. We have to address the fact that we had really reckless and runaway spending coming out of the pandemic after the pandemic had subsided and folks could safely get back to work. And so we got to look at the policymakers that got us into this spot. The blunt instrument of simply raising interest rates to tame inflation is painful for all of us.
Last thing for you, how complex is this budget debate that's going to happen in Congress? How hard is this going to be to figure this out?
It's going to be politically hard, but the math is pretty straightforward. And so the real key here is that the president's willing to come and have that conversation to put ourselves on a path to fiscal stability. You know, 8 times in the past 25, 30 years, we have seen the debt ceiling debate used as a mechanism to reach consensus, often across party lines, to get our fiscal house in order. The president's initial tone was that he wasn't going to debate with members of Congress or even meet with Speaker Kevin McCarthy. He changed his tune on that. He came, he met with Speaker McCarthy. That's progress. But now is the moment in time, especially after these banks have ultimately been taken over by the Federal Reserve. Now's the time to recognize that our fiscal house needs to be put in order, and we need to have that conversation about how we make sure that we're on a path to stability, not only for retirees, but for all workers across our country.
Wisconsin Congressman Brian Stahl, always appreciate your time. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks, Steve.
Absolutely. Congressman Brian Stahl, my congressman. I love the fact that we can hear directly from someone who's actually overseeing some of these important conversations in Washington, D.C., and happy to share that with you. We'll take a break here. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ.
The money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
Thanks to Congressman Brian Stile for joining us on this Tuesday in WTMJ. Happy Pi Day, everybody. So I mentioned during the interview that I had watched a clip from Gary Cohn, former economic advisor to Donald Trump in his administration. We have a little bit of that. I want to play that. I really want to get your reaction to this. This is a former member of Trump's administration talking about the real reasons. I've gotten texts already that are kind of going off into conspiracy land. Look, politics spins everything. But I wanted to play for you this for you because words matter. Former Trump economic advisor, his take on what happened with the bank failure at SVB.
But Mr. Cohn, first, what went wrong?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. We had a classic bank run. You know, it's as simple as that. We had a situation where people got scared about a bank's ability to return depositors' money, and depositors wanted their money out. And today, a bank run is different than we imagine a bank run. Today, a bank run happens on your telephone. People electronically bank, they hit the buttons on their phone, and automatically they can take all their money out of the bank. Banks are not designed to have deposits leave instantaneously. Banks take in deposits and they invest them for the long term to help us grow our economy. Our economy is based on banks being able to lend. Remember, we as consumers, we borrow money to buy houses. We borrow money to buy cars. We borrow money to buy things on our credit cards all day long. So banks do that by taking in deposits and then reinvesting them in the economy. If everyone wants to pull their money out simultaneously, that's not how banks are designed. That's not how they were ever envisioned.
Listen to the words, folks. You're going to get a lot of spin about this story. And the second bank that failed, I think it's Guaranty Bank, but I might got the name wrong, but there's a second bank that also had some failures. This feeds into the narrative, I think, that I have been talking about for a while. I hope this is not the case. I've seen this far too much of this. It's the politicization of bad economic trends, economy in general, inflation, recession, all of this tainted by politics. Why do I say that, Steve? Because uncertainty is driven by public perception. Perception is driven by the buzz, whether it's social media or on talk shows, that say the sky is falling, doom and gloom, panic time. So when I point the finger back at us, that's what I'm talking about. We are part of this story. We can basically throw our hands up and say, yeah, we're going to have inflation, a horrible recession, nothing I can do about it. But that's not the case. We can make sure that our leaders are heavily vested in fixing as much as they can, including Fed policy, how that can be shaped, initiating real conversations like the one I just had with Brian Stile, my congressman, about the reality versus fake reality, which frankly causes people to go on social media and basically say the sky is falling, scaring people, good, decent, honest people, scaring them, that causes runs on the bank. Now, the great news is in Wisconsin, I'd love to hear from you as well, 855-616-1620. Our banks are very healthy in this state. We are in good shape. And as Congressman Stile said, if you have less than $250,000, your money's guaranteed. No reason to panic. Having said all that, I'm curious where you're at on this. 855-616-1620. What does this mean for you? Are you making 401k or financial decisions that are different than you would have made, I don't know, 6 months ago, based on this perceived panic that some people, doom and gloomers, like to put out every day? Because I think they're trying to be, they think, politically wise by making the current administration look bad. It seems like a rather silly way to go about things, but a lot of things about politics these days are silly. Join the conversation, 855-616-1620 on WTMJ. I want to correct the record. That was Signature Bank is the second bank. I misspoke. Signature Bank and, of course, Silicon Valley Bank. Severe challenges. And my point in all of this was just saying There's a reason why these things happen. Real reasons, not fake conspiracy theory reasons. It's not crypto. It's not, there was another one going around yesterday about, decisions during the Trump administration about bank policy. There are certainly things you can disagree with about some of those changes or in the opinion of some experts, deregulation. But, I mean, you shouldn't be surprised that in some cases Republicans are going to be in favor of deregulation. They favor small government. Those aren't surprising things. Those are policy decisions. And obviously policy decisions have ramifications, often not understood until the reality hits them right in the face, i.e. railroads and now banks. So Signature Bank, Silicon Valley Bank are the two banks affected. I do think that there was some political consensus on this quickly, essentially talked about over the weekend, implemented to protect those investors in those banks, those people had those savings in there. And in the case of SVB, many significant tech companies. Now, you can be a critic of tech companies, but I'm not, because I think they do some amazing things in technology, in innovation that, frankly, we wouldn't see otherwise. And those folks, just like everybody else, deserve to get paid when their paydays come due. All right. We're going to continue the conversation after the news. Our news time here at WTMJ, 11:30. From our breaking news center, Eric Bilson. We still got some time before the top of the hour, and we handed off to Jeff Wagner asking the money question. So a lot of people are very nice and saying thanks for the interview with Congressman Brian Stelter. Yeah, I appreciate it. I love having Congressman on. One, he's my congressman, so it's a chance to have a one-on-one, which not everybody gets. But two, an important issue. And the reason that I'm talking about this is because of the reason I'm seeing the text line. Everyone has questions. And I'll repeat, I am not a financial advisor nor expert. I have people like Annex Wealth Management, Dave Spano, who I bring on the show every Monday at 10:35. And, of course, he and his great co-workers at Annex Wealth Management answer all your questions and kind of lay it out for you when it comes to financial planning, investments, the future on Saturday mornings on Money Talk. That's the reality. So I appreciate the questions. I can't answer financial planning questions, but I certainly can point you in the direction of Annex Wealth Management. But why this matters is something that I was talking about before the break. We have a time post, I say post-pandemic. I also understand, as I talked about earlier, that we're still in a pandemic, and I think most reasonable, rational adults agree with that. Dealing with the reality of the pandemic still exists. And part of that reality is we pumped a ton of money into our economy, to all of you, many of you, in response to what was happening to your jobs, your life, inflation. And there's always challenges based on that. And there's the crazy thing about the financial industry now and the economy is the people making decisions often suffer the same thing that we do. They let politics shape those decisions. And that's unfortunate because certainly that prism impacts whatever decisions are made. And I don't say that lightly. And it often comes into play when you hear our elected leaders in Congress who make very political statements about things that directly impact each and every one of us, i.e. our 401ks, savings rates, interest rates, inflation, recession. And there's a group of people that profit on that. They bet on the downside. They bet on the downturn. Almost like a roulette wheel, right? And they are looking for bad news. And they bet on bad news happening. I have friends that do this. I see people in the industry do this. That's not me. Our thoughts, our opinions, our feelings about the economy often have a bigger role than I think we get credit for. Do we have confidence? I hope so. We just had a worldwide pandemic 3 years from St. Patrick's Day, the essential shutdown day here in Wisconsin, this Friday. And I did a big part of the show before on what we learned. And what we have not learned is that we have control over these situations. Absolutely, we do. And one of the ways we control that is to elect people that actually are thoughtful, well-intentioned, don't spread doom and gloom, whether it's on a vaccine or the economy of the country, pick a subject, really, environments. Don't spread doom and gloom in place of actually working towards fixing these things. From the Old National Bank talk and text line. From the 262, my observation is that any bank, no matter how financially sound, including those here in Wisconsin, is vulnerable to runs triggered by influential internet voices, regardless of their merit and accuracy. Yeah, that's a problem. That is a big problem. That's why I discourage people from exhibiting behavior, whether just in their brain or actually making them go to their bank and start withdrawing money. Not helpful. Now, I also understand that for a lot of older Americans, they are concerned about their 401ks. That is a problem. That is a risk. Because when you get to be older, you don't have as much makeup time. You lose funds. It's hard to make those back because you don't have the benefit of time, which any financial planner will tell you. Over time, everything goes up over time. But if you're in one of those downturns, not so good. Mitch, I think you're right about the language of this matters. For instance, we've always heard the adage, now is not the time to panic, as if any time is the time where panic is helpful. Now we heard, if it's less than $250,000, you don't need to panic. So if you have more than that, would it be time to panic? No wonder it's confusing. Yes. And keep in mind, I don't want to play class wars here. There's a heck of a lot of people that have more than $250,000, more than you think. So let's not just discount that, because I've heard that said a lot. Just discounting those folks. Those are the same folks who run businesses, who drive the economy, who buy things of value. Consumers extraordinaire. And do they have a legitimate fear if their savings above $250,000 aren't protected? You bet they do. But I get a sense that those people aren't necessarily the ones that are fearing this. From the 262, the president is kind of pursing his words when he says the public will not be affected, will not have to pay for this problem with the banks if the FDIC is going to cover everybody and all the other banks get charged certain fees from the FDIC. Those funds are going to all right, there's a lot here, so I'm not going to try to read this whole thing. It must have been voice recorded and not typed out. But the point is going to, who's paying for this is the essence of the text. You know what the answer always is? It's the federal. We're paying for it. So it is a little bit disingenuous that President Joe Biden is saying we won't. You pass it on to banks, that industry? Last time I checked, they charge fees. They charge their users. That ultimately is us. I got a break coming, don't I? Break coming. Here, we'll take a break here. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 855-616-1620. My point is this. The immediate reaction of the administration to this problem with SVB and Signature Bank, I think, was generally well respected by both sides of the political aisle. I think it was quick enough. I think it was adequate. But there's a bigger growing problem, which I'm trying to get to, which is that there's this perception out there that things aren't okay. We can live in that world of doom and gloom, but I would prefer not to. American people have a lot of power. They just don't know it yet. Even in the direction of the economy. That's my point. Join us, 855-616-1620. Quick break. Radio. Talking about your money, your savings, your investments. Now, a great text, because I think this is the right approach, from Chris in Hartford. We're not jumping the gun, but we'll schedule a meeting with our financial planner. That's exactly right. That's what we should all be doing. Have a plan, because if you don't have a plan, and there's a lot of individual investors out there some of them have a lot of money that, frankly, are losing opportunity, not making the right decision. I use Annex Wealth Management, great partner of us here at WTMJ. Since day one, which was sometime last summer, enjoy the experience, but more importantly, I get good, sound financial planning advice. And that's probably the best advice I could give anybody. From the 414, America is a wasteful society. If we as a country would stop being such a wasteful bunch, demand would go down for many things and the economy, and would right the economy again in many ways. Demand is a good thing. So careful what you ask for. I think all of us understand our role. I hope we do. We buy things. Now, the kind of the dazzling details here is, so a couple of things. One, at least the Dow, market's generally up today. Dow is back over 32,000. Last look was about 320 on the plus side. Good thing. But we also have the consumer price index numbers come out today. Looking at, if you don't know what it is, the average basket of consumer goods and services purchased by households. And it measures those changes in those prices over time. Everything from vehicles, energy, gas, you name it. Everything we spend money on. And it did slow to 6%, but that's still high. And we've had a very slow, what does Dave Spano call it? Sticky, right? It's sticky. It's not correcting. Even though all those Fed increases, which have made borrowing money, especially if you have credit card balances, more expensive. So good response, I think, in the markets. No panic there, hopefully. Down from its, it was at 34,000 like about a month or two ago. So it is down, generally reflecting all the things we've been talking about. From the 262, hi, Steve, if I can, I buy more of the stocks I own. Tony from Kenosha. Yeah, I mean, opportunity. Buy low, sell high. 262. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but somebody sent me a picture of Heather Graham. That's always a good thing. That makes for a good day. And then underneath it, French silk pie. Favorite pie, my favorite actress. How about that? 920. Text her correctly. Yes, 6% over last year. Right? So that's the increase over last year. So all of those sectors we're talking about, the cost of goods and services still too high, which causes concern, strain on one's personal budget. All those things matter. And, you know, just the overall, just put a ribbon on this. Much of this, going back to my earlier conversation about the pandemic, is related to the tremendous, Spano says this all the time, the outflow of cash that came out of the federal government. Stimulus checks, PPP payments. My words, often to companies that didn't need them. I'm looking at you, Tom Brady, $1 million. He should have paid that back, but he didn't. What's the bottom line? There's uncertainty. Is it time to panic? Absolutely not. And I think most of the texters are in that same place. Panic is going to cause a lot more problems. I often say being nervous is kind of a wasted exercise. It doesn't change the result. It just makes you miserable. That's all it does. So you minimize the nerves, the panic, the stress, certainly, because that will kill you. And maybe we don't have a serious recession. Not a fan of doom and gloom. There's people that peddle that. They certainly make a lot of money doing it. That's not me. All right. We'll have a final look at our show poll. We'll tee up a little bit of tomorrow's show, and then we'll see what Jeff Wagner is going to talk about after this on WTMJ.
WTMJ.
Hey, all new radio listeners. This is Max. I bet this joke of the week will make you hungry. Why did the cherry pie go to the dentist? To get a filling. Back to the Steve's Graffiti Show.
Oh, young Max, brilliant comedy talents. That kid's going places. Now 7 years old. Little humor on this Tuesday edition. All right, so my show, you guys are bombing this thing. 300 votes already. 38 comments. Well done, all of you. I had some fun. Of course, it's Pi Day. Now, I took the P-I and made it P-I-E, the pie we all love, most of us. What is your favorite pie? So right now, it's a close race. So the choices were apple, pumpkin, sweet potato, and other. Right now, with 38.5% of the votes, Apple is narrowly ahead, defeating other, and I'll give you a few of the choices that people pick. Pumpkin, a respectable 22.7%. I love pumpkin pie. Now, this one, I am shocked by this. Sweet potato, only 1%, 1% of you, 300-plus respondents. Have you ever had it? Mr. Dye's Pies, who's here in the 3rd Street Market Hall, fantastic sweet potato pie. I might even say, I might go as far as to say better than pumpkin. A few of the other ones, of course, the French silks, Boston cream, making myself hungry. Key lime, not a fan, but I get it. Pizza pie, eh, that's more food than dessert, right? Anyway, our look at pie on Pie Day. Yeah, I know it's about circles and infinity and all that stuff. But I'm not a mathematician, nor would I pretend to be. All right, my time is up. Jeff Wagner is ready and raring to go. What are you going to talk about today, Jeff?
Steve, thanks so very much. And by the way, the answer to your poll question is Apple, period. We've got a lot of stuff coming up on our program. It's one of the reasons why people hate lawyers. Guy is suing Buffalo Wild Wings over the definition of boneless wings. Yes, we will go down that route. Donald Trump, if he doesn't get the Republican nomination, he might go third party. Will people still support him? We are going to talk about, you know, what's happened in the banking industry and raise the question about how secure do you feel about what is going on? You know, a number of people who retired 3 years ago when the pandemic hit? Well, a lot of businesses want those people back. And the folks who retired early say, we're not coming back. What's going on with that? We will end up discussing. A large Wisconsin healthcare facility announces that it is now going to stop requiring patients and visitors to wear face masks. Are they doing the right thing? Activists in Portland, Oregon are, in my view and the view of many, trying to help but making things worse when it comes to homelessness. We discuss that. We start off, though, with a really, really interesting story, because you remember a few weeks ago, we talked about how the Biden administration was deciding to go after gas stoves. Now, they pulled back a little bit because there was such a backlash to that. Well, they're not satisfied with trying to take the gas stoves out of your kitchen. Now there are new rules out that if they end up being implemented, they're coming to your laundry room, and the result is going to be your washing machine prices are going to go up dramatically, and your clothes are probably going to be dirtier and stinkier. But they're from the government, and they're here to help you. That's where we start. The Wagner Show begins right after the top of the hour news.